If anybody ever asks you to name all of the different places that Paul visited on his three missionary journeys, and you find for some reason that you can't remember the name of every single town and city and burg he visited, you can always take the easy way out and say that he just went here, there, and everywhere. Paul was what we would call nowadays a road warrior, traveling all over Asia Minor, going into Europe, spending time in the Holy Land. He traveled on land, he traveled at sea. Can't imagine he always stayed in luxurious accommodations. There were no hotel points for him to accrue, no minibar for him to enjoy. Probably a lot of towns that he wished he'd never been to because folks weren't always receptive to what he had to say. But there were those other places he visited where people did want to hear the gospel and were curious about the stories he wanted to share about life with Jesus Christ. Now, Paul, as we can sense from the gospels and from the epistles, Paul had a pretty strong sense of what he wanted to do, which included knowing where he wanted to go. And if we look at the verses that immediately precede this morning's lectionary reading, we see that he wanted to spend some time in Asia, in the western part of Asia Minor, and Bithynia. This struck him as being fertile territory to do his work, but the Holy Spirit wouldn't let him stay there. And so it pushed him along until he found himself at Troas. And then he has this vision of a Macedonian saying, "Come here, come here." And Paul responds. And then we hear how he blows through these different places, Samothrace and Neapolis, and then he gets to Philippi. Philippi, which is described as being a leading city in the district and a Roman colony. Get a sense that Paul is trying to talk up this place like it's important. If you go to New York City, you don't need to say it's the largest city in the country. It's the financial capital of the world. Everybody knows about New York. But if you go to East Overshoe, then you have to explain to people that it's the largest producer of ball bearings in the upper Midwest. It's as if Paul is trying to say to himself, as much to you and me, this place is important, and the work I'm doing is important, and I should be here, really. But to Paul's credit, once he's there, he settles down and he focuses. And he seeks out the people of God in worship. And he knows he can locate them down by the river. They'll be gathered. And he starts to preach. And there something wonderful happens. There's a woman, Lydia. We're told she's a worshiper of God, a Gentile who is drawn to the Lord of Israel. And her heart is opened, and the Holy Spirit enters in. Down by the water, something special happens to these two very different people, to this former Pharisee, and to this merchant, to this man, this woman, to this Jew, and this Gentile, to these two people who came from very different places. Here, all of their differences matter not because they are united in God. And that happened because both Paul and Lydia were willing to leave the familiar. They were willing to explore something new, to do something different. that opened up possibilities for them. What a wonderful text for us to be reading during this Eastertide season. We've already proclaimed the good news that Jesus Christ is risen, that life conquers death, that hope prevails over despair. But we're not always quite sure what that means and what to do with it. And we can puzzle that over as we make our way towards Pentecost and the birth of the church and all of those people from different places gathered in Jerusalem find themselves united in the Holy Spirit. A few moments ago, Valerie mentioned that we had a deacon's retreat. And we discussed a number of different things there about how we could deepen and enrich our life as a church. In particular, how we could do that through worship. And there are a whole bunch of different ideas that were shared. And they didn't require us upending the apple cart and completely changing the order of worship on Sunday morning and introducing completely different music and ripping out the pews. Small things, we agreed, could have a tremendous impact. And so next month on Communion Sunday, we are going to resume the passing of the peace. Now, I suspect many of us have experienced the passing of the peace as one of the great liturgical clunkers. It will never, ever end. Someone will decide to have a meeting during the passing of the peace. Others will engage in long conversations. And it will seem pointless, having completely disrupted the flow of the service. But the passing of the peace, I hope, has also been experienced in a very different way by people here, and will be as we do it, as a profound theological statement, as we extend our hands and say to one another, "The peace of Christ be with you." And then we have people say in response, "And also with you." These words give voice to a powerful, beautiful hope that we can know a peace that can shape us and sustain us and renew us. And we need not worry that we won't be able to shake everybody's hand, because there'll be somebody here to shake the hand of the person on the other side of the sanctuary. And so everybody will have given the peace and received the peace and will have done this as a community. And that will give us great joy. We see from Lydia that when we go into church and to worship, open, the Holy Spirit can fill us and refresh us and help us to experience God in new ways and exciting ways. And we see from Paul that sometimes we just need to set aside our preconceptions as to how we should do things or where we should do them. And then God will deliver us a deeper, richer experience than we ever imagined. So sometimes the Holy Spirit won't necessarily be exactly where we think it will be. But we know that ultimately it can be found here, there, and everywhere.